The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
If you're enjoying the Hoop Heads Podcast, please think about leaving us a rating and review in iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast. It would really help us to grow our audience and get people out there to be able to find the show a lot easier. We appreciate your help, and if you wouldn't mind, please make that rating 5 stars. Hello, and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are back tonight with a special Thanksgiving edition of our NBA podcast. We're going to let Jason walk us through some of the more interesting goings-on in the NBA right now. So, Jason, what's our first topic tonight?
The first topic is something I'm very thankful for. The Cavs officially tanking.
Well, I've been thankful for that ever since I revised my prediction of 42-40. When I revised it back to 0-82, of course, that prediction is wrong, but... I definitely feel like we're going to end up somewhere in the range of 10 to 15 victories.
You don't think above 15? You think, well, I mean, I understand.
Who are we beating? who are we beating, and what are we beating them with?
I guess you're probably right there. Atlanta, can we play Atlanta 7 more times? We might beat them.
Well, I don't know how many more times we have them on their schedule, but it's not enough for us to get to 25 victories. Can I just say that?
Yeah, so just a few notes about the Cavs. Today, so we're taping this 11 o'clock on the 20th of November. J.R. Smith, the Cavs officially released a statement stating that J.R. Smith and him and them were having a mutual parting of the ways. This is following his comments last night. Did you hear the comments last night?
I did not.
His comments following the game last night being, "The goal is not for us to win games right now. I want to be traded." It was essentially what he said.
Well, let's hope we can accommodate J.R.'s wishes, because I think if we can turn him into anything, even a bag of donuts, it may end up being beneficial for the Cavs' ultimate plan, which I believe right now the plan is entitled Zion.
Zion. I think it's really, you know, you've seen those Allstate commercials, Life Comes at You Fast. I think the Cavs are at that Life Comes at You Fast. You know, MC Hammer sitting in front of his mansion, and all of a sudden just sitting there with a lawn chair. That's kind of what the Cavs are in. And it's really, you know, when you think about it, really sad, because, you know, what that had been built here, and then, you know, Kyrie leaves, and obviously LeBron being the biggest piece leaves, and now we've got J.R. Smith wanting out, the Ty Lue drama.
Hey, but we have those hideous city jerseys.
That's true. We have the hideous. Although the court was pretty nice looking. The court is way nicer than the jersey themselves.
The court looks good. The jerseys are just horrendous. So, I can't imagine.
So the other big question, and I feel really bad for Korver and the whole situation here. They really needed to...
Korver's going to get traded.
He better get traded, because, you know, everything that's been going on and you know, on top of all that, the Cavs are getting sued by, what's his name, the one assistant, former assistant coach.
Jim Boylan.
Because of age discrimination, and who knows what Kevin Love has got going on. I mean,
Kevin Love's going to get traded.
He's got to get traded now.
The problem is what is his value? From the Cavs standpoint, the problem is what can you get in return for him? But the reality is that no matter what you get from him, it's still, whatever your timetable is for your next possible opportunity to contend, it's going to be with Colin Sexton and whoever they get in this next draft. That's going to be your nucleus for...
And Chetty.
A theoretical, contention in the future.
I know. I'm totally on board with they're going to trade Love, but I'm hesitant to say that he's going to get traded this season. I'm starting to lean, especially with his injury and everything going on. I'm leaning towards the fact that they're going to trade him in the offseason. They're going to ride out this season with him, and then see what the market is, because maybe they're going to address it in the draft and trade him in the draft or something like that. They might just ride it out with him this
season.
Depends
on what you can get for him.
I think that's totally what's the market for him.
Yeah, it depends on what you can get for him. If you can trade him and get something that you feel adds value again to the future, then you trade him now. If what you're getting in return isn't attractive, then you probably do wait until the draft or to the summer. But I'm not 100% sure that his value is going to increase over the course of time. Maybe you strike, I don't know, while the iron is at least lukewarm.
Well, do you think he's definitely going to play in more games as a Cavalier, correct? Like, they're not going to trade
him. Yeah, I don't think they're going to trade him coming off the injury, although you never know. Again, I think it just depends on what's out there. You know, you look at some of the teams that are in contention. Is there a team that he fits? And to be honest, I haven't gone and studied the rosters of all the potential contenders, but somebody can use a guy who's 6'10 and can shoot the ball and can rebound and do things. He's got to be a useful piece for someone.
I think there's a team that I have in my mind, and I don't think they would ever trade for him, but I think that a team that could use him would be Portland.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, Portland could use, I think, somebody that can shoot a little bit in the front court. He doesn't necessarily solve their defensive issues, which I think is probably their biggest need. You know, the McCollum and Lillard backcourt, I think that's one of the things that people always point to, is that those guys are just not good enough defensively.
They gave up 114 points to the Knicks tonight. So,
yeah, and you know, again, the league's playing at a faster pace, so it's, you know, to a certain degree, it's understandable. But I think if you look at the long-term viability of Portland as a real, true championship contender, it's going to be difficult to build the kind of defense you need around McCollum and Lillard.
All right, so the one last note on the Cavs. Tomorrow night, the return, LeBron, Lakers against the Cavs.
Okay, so you already predicted it. He's going to score 50.
Two things, and then this is, he's either going to score 50 or he's going to have a triple-double with like it being like 30, 15, and 12 or something like that. Like, just a ridiculous stat line.
Okay, so I will say that it feels like he exercised some demons by scoring more than 50 against the Heat, because it felt like when he came back here to the Cavs, he would kind of melt into a little bit of a puddle anytime they played the Heat. So it makes me wonder in the past. So I'd say if I go back, not maybe the last 2 years of LeBron, but if I go back pre that particular point in time, LeBron, I would say that he doesn't necessarily always come up with those big, like if it was Jordan, I mean, there's no question Jordan scoring 50 in that game tomorrow. It's not even a question mark. But with LeBron, I could see it being, and especially in the past, where he wouldn't come up with that big game in a situation where you always would think, man, that guy's got to be super motivated. But I will say, in the last 2 years, he's become much more reliable in those kinds of situations. So I wouldn't be stunned if he gets 50, but to be honest, I wouldn't be stunned if he gets 17 either.
Well, I think the other thing too we have to consider is, I think as much of the cast of characters of the Lakers are, I think they're going to destroy us, and he might not play much in the fourth quarter because they're just not, the Cavs might put up a fight in the first quarter, but I just think that tomorrow, especially if LeBron goes off in the first few quarters, he might not see more than 2 or 3 minutes in the fourth quarter. And that would definitely diminish his stat line, right?
All right, well, the Lakers are only a juggernaut when compared to the Cavs. So let me throw out two Lakers questions to you. I want you to answer these questions as honestly and truthfully as you possibly can. Question one, is Luke Walton, the coach of the LA Lakers, on June 1st, 2019?
I said it on my last podcast, I feel like I said it, that he was going to get fired. And Phil, who you know, he was surprised when I said that. I think he's going to get fired. Unless they completely turn around and, I mean, if they got a big trade, maybe he could salvage his job.
Yeah, this is a little bit too much analysis.
But no.
No, he is not going to be the coach of the Lakers on June 1st, 2019. There's no history of LeBron being in a situation, I guess Spoelstra, but I just don't see it.
Okay, what's your second question?
Second question. Do the Lakers win 45 games?
No, but I think your prediction of 42
I said
and 40.
I think I believe if we go back, we might have to pull up the tape. 42 and 40.
I think 42 and 40 is very, I mean, they're 9-8 right now.
Does that put them in the playoffs?
In the West? Oh boy, and I don't know. I mean, there's some of these teams that are above them right now are going to drop off, but I think also some of the teams that are below them are going to pick it up. So I think they would be right where a little bit below at this point where I thought they would be. Because I think I said they were going to be a 4 or 5 seed, but I think they're probably hedging more at a 7 or an 8 unless they make a big trade.
Yeah, and there's too many good teams in the West for them to be a 4 or 5 seed. I mean, I think none of those teams sort of in the tier below, you know, depending on who you put in that top tier, if you still keep the Rockets in there, which I'm dubious of whether there really is a
second currently tier. Also 9 and 8.
Right. I'm dubious that there's another tier for the Rockets.
But talk about exercising the demons, getting rid of Carmelo. You know, as much as they were the whole drama, Carmelo drama. You know, they were trying to say, oh, Carmelo, this Carmelo that. He's been great. Obviously, it wasn't working, and he needed to go because he wasn't doing the things. I just remember the first game of the season when they're playing, and he everyone else is jacking up threes.
Took the two and shrugged his shoulders.
Took his two, shrugged his shoulders, and sorry, that's my game. Like, okay, if you're gonna come to this team and you're not gonna adapt to the way that they play, I'm not saying that he should have been jacking up threes, but you know, he kind of did that consciously, knowing that he wasn't gonna fit in, and you know, who knows where he goes? Where do you think he goes?
China.
He thinks he's going to China.
At this point,
oh boy.
What evidence is there that Carmelo is a viable NBA player that helps you to be successful? I mean, maybe is he a box office draw this point in his career?
I think I say this very dubiously. I think that he's going to end up on the Lakers, and I don't know why. I don't have a good reason.
I mean, that's probably as likely.
I mean,
of a place as.
I mean, any. He's making veteran minimum. So you know, you bring him in, you throw him in a spot, and it's none of these garbage teams are going to pick him up.
Well, but he's now been in two. If you're looking for, again, Olympic Melo, he's been in two situations that, in theory, are ideal for a guy that is going to catch and shoot and spot up and be able to play offense and do things where you have guys that are creating offense for you, creating opportunities. And the only thing, I mean, if you're a bad team, do you really want to take and put Carmelo in your mix where he's going to become your main scorer? Like, what team is tanking or what team is terrible that is terrible and also is not trying to develop some of their young guys? Like, you think about any of the teams that are at the bottom of the league, like, there's no team that's just saying, oh, we have no young guys, we're just, you know, we're just throwing caution to the wind, we're just going to turn our offense over to Carmelo. I mean, every team that's young, that's bad, is young and has at least, you know, 1, 2, 3 guys who they want to develop and they want to be able to put the ball in their hands and have them do stuff.
What about the Cavs?
I mean, the Cavs are probably, other than, again, I don't know. I mean, Sexton and Chetty. Are there any other guys that we have?
Could you imagine? I guess
Larry Nance Jr. probably is a piece on a good team.
Jordan Clarkson, man.
Jordan Clarkson. He loves to shoot.
He was doing it again last night.
Listen, I think it's in his DNA. I don't think there's any way to get it out of him. Again, Jordan Clarkson has skills. He does have basketball skills, but I just, he's not a guy that anybody I can imagine would want to play with because he just doesn't pass. Like, he's a guy who pounds the ball, looks for a shot, and then looks for a shot. And then finally, if he can't take a shot, he still might shoot it, and only then will he throw a desperation pass to somebody else. It's just not a winning player.
Yeah, and the thing that about him, and I know we're going back to the Cavs here, and we're going to move on in a second, but the fact that they keep trotting him out there with Sexton on the floor is going to only stunt Sexton's growth. And Sexton's actually looked pretty solid the last...
It's good to see some life from Sexton that, you know, it was looking a little shaky there for a few games where, you know, he wasn't getting very many minutes, and then when he was in there, he wasn't doing a whole lot, so it's been nice to see him in the last couple games break out and do a little bit
more. So here's my question. Is George Hill going to get traded? Because ever since George Hill had his injury, Sexton stepped in and kind of taken on the responsibilities. Now, they're not winning games, and I think at this point we're not expecting them to win games. But the only way, and this goes back to what we talked about a few episodes ago when we talked NBA, was you know, Philly kept throwing Markelle Fultz in the situation. You just get him some reps, get him some reps, get him some reps. What we should be doing is throwing Sexton out there, having him play 35, 36, 37 minutes, whether it's great minutes or not, just to get him to develop and play and get those, you know, get his legs under him. And what's George Hill accomplishing at this point, other than taking minutes away from him? And I guess taking minutes away from Clarkson would probably be a benefit. But
I mean, the reality is that I think everybody on that roster is or should be available other than Sexton and Chetty Osman. I mean, I just think that everybody else on that roster, if you were able to get something of value for them, there's no reason for the Cavs to hang on to anybody else on the team. I mean, I just don't think, one, from a standpoint of where they are age-wise, and two, when you're not actively trying to win games, I just think that why have these veteran guys around? I mean, you obviously got to fill out your roster, and you know they're not going to trade all 12 or 13 other guys on the roster. But if somebody makes a call about George Hill, it's not like Kobe Altman's going to hang up on him.
I will say there's one guy that I know is going to be on our team at the end of the season, because no one wanted him in free agency. Rodney Hood is going to be a Cavalier, I think, through the whole rest of the season.
Right. If we could trade theoretical Rodney Hood, we could probably get something for him. But if we actually want to trade the real Rodney Hood, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of opportunity for teams to go after him.
All right, let's move on. The next thing, obviously, the other topic, you know, the other Titan of last few years, the Warriors, and all the drama. And I don't know how much you've listened to podcasts or read about all the stuff that was supposedly said and this and that, but you know, this is not a good look right now for them. I mean, I think they're going to be fine in the end. I think they'll get through this season, but I definitely think this is the last year. I don't think with everything that's happened and Draymond's press conference yesterday. I don't know if you saw anything from that, but
I didn't see the
Draymond's press conference yesterday. He stated something along the lines of, whatever Kevin's going to do, whatever Clay's going to do, what we've had here has been really special. So that hints to me that there's some underlying currents and just, the, you know, kind of put his foot in his mouth there in a sense with, you know, he kind of laid the cards out, like whatever they're going to do, you know, we had a great run here already and we're only 15 games into the season. So I think, you know, this is probably the last year that the Warriors are going to be the way they're constructed now. Obviously, Steph's there for a little bit longer, and I don't see him leaving anytime soon, and I probably don't see Draymond leaving anytime soon. But possibility of, you know, Durant and Thompson leaving at the end of this season, it may happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question with Draymond is when he comes up for his next contract, is he going to get the max contract that he wants? And again, I'm not a big fan of Draymond Green. I like the way he plays the game within, if you take away his personality and you take away, you know, the way he treats people and that kind of thing. I think that he's a good player, but he's not a guy that I would want in my locker room. He's not a guy that I would want to play with. And you know, if you look at it from a situation of Durant and you look at Draymond and you look at what happened and what transpired between the two of them, there's no way you can look at that and say that that doesn't have an effect within that team's locker room. And obviously, I think there's already been, you know, some signs of, you know, some splitting. And they're not necessarily splitting in any kind of way that is totally traumatic, but I think Durant, you know, I think he's an outsider. I mean, he came in, he wasn't part of that group as they fought their way up from, you know, being a non-playoff team to being a playoff team to being a championship team. And I think when you haven't gone through the same things those other guys have gone through, it can create a little bit of resentment. And, you know, I think Draymond was, you know, expressing that. And I'm not sure it was the right way to express it. I'm not sure that it was something that was necessary. But I do think it shows that underlying theme of, you know, why hasn't Durant signed a long-term contract with us? Why is he still continuing to sign these one-on-one deals? That's hanging over the franchise. We know what it did here in Cleveland when LeBron signed the one-on-one. It just makes everything that much more stressful and that much more overanalyzed in terms of what's this guy going to do? What's he not going to do? And it's interesting because if you go back 2 years ago when that team won 73 games and in 2016 the Cavs won the title, you know, that was a team without Durant.
And what did they do? When they walked out of the stadium, Draymond called up Kevin Durant and said, "You need to come play with us." And now, look where we're at.
What's interesting is I think if Durant is not there, I don't know that there's certainly not the same fear of the Warriors if Durant is not there. And, you know, again, you could go back and replay the last two finals in your mind however many times you want. And I think if Durant's not on that team, you know, you can make an argument that
LeBron's still here.
Well, and you can make an argument that Cavs get at least one of those titles, and, you know, who knows? Maybe they get a second one, too. So it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm not sure where he's going to go. I can't imagine that he wants to go play with LeBron. I don't foresee him wanting to really go and play for the Los Angeles Clippers, despite the change of culture that's occurred under Steve Ballmer. Does he really want to go play for James Dolan and the Knicks? I don't know where the landing spot is, but I won't be very surprised if he's not a member of the Golden State Warriors next year. And to be honest, I wouldn't be that surprised if Draymond is not a member of the Golden State Warriors. If it was Steph, Clay, and Durant, I could see that. If it was get rid of Durant and it's still Steph, Clay, and Draymond, I could see that too.
All right, moving on. We've kind of talked a little bit about Philly so far, but the Jimmy Butler trade happened since last time we talked. Jimmy Butler, now a member of the Philadelphia 76ers. Obviously an interesting move. I think it definitely firms their spot in probably being the third best team in the East, if not maybe moves them up to second, depending. You know, Boston looks like a hot mess a little bit right now, but and Hayward's definitely not looked good.
He's still finding his way back. I mean, it's, you know, it's early. You think of, again, about the traumatic injury that he had, and then he had the setback with having to have the second surgery. I think that, you know, he's going to get back to it eventually, provided that he's 100% healthy, which obviously none of us know from the outside. But if he's 100% healthy, he's going to get back to the level where he was playing in Utah. And when they have that player, then Boston's going to have to figure it out. Again, they have a lot of guys that want to play and that probably deserve to play. And speaking from it from a playing standpoint, it's sometimes difficult to know that you're not going to play for long stretches or you're not going to get the minutes that you think you should be getting. Mm-hmm. And sometimes then it's hard to produce at the same level in a shorter amount of minutes just because it's not the way you're used to playing as a, you know, as a major important player on a team.
Okay, so going back to the Philly thing, what do you think of the Jimmy Butler trade?
So I like Jimmy Butler as a player in terms of the skills that he brings to the Sixers. He kind of fills in a lot of the holes of things that they needed to fill. So he's a physical, tough defender that can guard multiple positions. He's not necessarily a pure knockdown shooter, but he can shoot threes well enough that he can, you know, keep defenses honest and make guys guard him out on the line. And then the thing that Philly has sort of lacked is the crunch time guy that they can go to. Obviously, Simmons, teams are going to back way off him and clog the paint, and he's just not willing to shoot at this point in his career. And it's more difficult, I think, to get a big guy the ball. And, you know, do you really want Embiid in crunch time setting up outside the three-point line and putting the ball on the floor? He's still a little bit turnover-prone at this point in his career. So Butler gives them that. So all that being said, though, you just look at what Jimmy Butler has done from a personality and teammate standpoint in Chicago and then in Minnesota, and you've got to wonder at some point, again, we've talked about this in other circumstances, but if there's always a problem and you're always there, at some point, the situation, the team, the coach isn't the problem. At some point, maybe you're the problem, and that's what I worry about. If I'm Philly, that's what I worry about when it comes to Jimmy Butler. If things don't go the way Jimmy Butler wants them to, what ends up happening to the chemistry of that team? And obviously there's already some talk out there that Embiid and Simmons aren't maybe as tight or good of friends, or, you know, they have a working relationship, but maybe they're not, you know, wed to each other long-term in terms of both of them wanting to stay in Philly. So you know, you wonder that if Butler gets in there and things don't go perfectly, that's what I would worry about from a chemistry standpoint. Yet at the same time, I think if I was Philly, I would have pulled the trigger, because if it does work out, you potentially have something that, again, none of those other teams can match, and that you have three of the top 15, 20 players in the league.
Yeah, and we'll say something that's interesting that's lost in this whole thing, and I haven't heard anyone thoroughly talk about it, is Tom Thibodeau was around Jimmy Butler in Chicago. Why would he bring him to Minnesota?
Well, because I think that Butler is quote-unquote Tibbs kind of guy, so he's a hard-nosed guy. He's a guy that brings a fiery attitude. He's a guy that is determined to win. He's a guy that wants to do things his way. He's a guy who wants to play a lot of minutes. He's a guy that wants to grind. He's a guy who was not a star in college and had to put in time and had to put in work. He's not a prima donna. And I think those are all things that Tibbs likes. And so I think it was more a case of, you know, by the time those major problems happened in Chicago, you know, Tibbs wasn't there anymore. That was, you know, that was Hoiberg. And so Tibbs looks back at it and goes, during the time I was there, Jimmy Butler busts his butt. He works hard. He's a guy that, you know, has a, you know, every skill that you would want for a modern NBA player. So why not bring him in? And I think it was more a case of maybe not Tibbs understanding Jimmy Butler, but I think it was more a case of Tibbs not understanding Towns and Wiggins and the kind of personalities that those guys have. And again, that's not to indict Butler or Towns or Wiggins in that situation, because certainly, like I said earlier, you can put blame on Butler because he's now done that in two different cities. But, you know, you don't know what kind of personalities Towns and Wiggins have. Maybe they need somebody to kind of light that fire underneath them. And maybe Wiggins, maybe Butler didn't do it in the right way. But, you know, it's just, again, well, he definitely didn't do it in the right way.
I was going to say, showing up the training camp with the ESPN and doing the whole shtick.
Revised. He definitely didn't do it the right way. But when he first got there, you got to assume that those tirades and things that he demonstrated at the end were not his first attempt at trying to get those guys to compete and play hard. And that's not to say that they don't, but it's definitely something that I think when you talk about Butler and bringing him into a situation, there's obviously the possibility that it could become combustible. So it'll be interesting to see how those, the three main guys now in Philly, fit together.
All right, and the one last thing on Philly. Today was announced that Markel Fultz will see a shoulder specialist early next week and will be away from the team until he is evaluated. According to David Aldridge, this can't be good. And he's been struggling this year, and there were even talks of TJ McConnell taking minutes away from him, which, I mean, TJ McConnell's, he's kind of Philly's version of Dellavedova for when he played for the, you know, Cavs, I feel. And he's beloved in Philly. And this whole Markel Fultz drama, once again, starting up, you know, he has not been playing real, real well. His last three games, he scored 0 points against Phoenix. He scored 6 points against Charlotte. He scored 6 against Houston, 8 against Orlando, 5 against Miami. Obviously, you know, that's his last 5 games. He has not looked very good. He's averaging 8 points a game, and I guess the shoulder's back to having issues.
I still think that, I mean, maybe he has a physical shoulder injury that started the whole process, but I think at this point he's inside of his own head, and I think that's something that is very, very difficult. Once it's in there, I think it's very, very difficult to get it out, and I think you can get it out to some degree. But I got to believe that those yips, for lack of a better term, are just, they're just there. And even if you can push them down and get help from a sports psychologist and be able to fight through that, I think you always have that in the back of your head.
Hey, we just sent him to Lindsay Huddleston, right? Sports psychologist.
Yes, exactly.
You send him there.
Yeah, we should talk to Lindsay again about what he would do with Markel Fultz, because I feel terrible for the kid. I think he's somebody that obviously has, you know, a ton of physical talent, and he worked hard to get himself to where he was, and maybe this whole thing started with the shoulder, and then when he couldn't shoot the ball using his normal motion, it started getting into his head, and now he's just, I think he's in his own way, and it's going to take a long time to be able to overcome that. I mean, I look at, you know, a guy like Chuck Knobloch in baseball who couldn't throw the ball to second base. And it's sort of that same thing. Like, there's no real rhyme or reason for what happens or why it happens, but the mind sometimes just, again, doesn't allow your body to do the things that it's naturally, you know, been taught to do. And so I think that's really where we're at. Again, there may be some physical piece of it, but I think even if his shoulder is 100%, there's still going to be that psychological piece that he's got to overcome. There's just not a huge history of guys having this happen where they get something in their head and then suddenly they're able to bounce back. Rick Ankiel, I don't know if you remember that
name from
baseball.
Yeah,
he was
a pitcher and then converted to an outfielder.
Right, because he just couldn't throw the ball over the plate. And, you know, you think about David Duvall in golf and, you know, he's a number one player and suddenly he got the yips putting the ball and he never was the same. And, you know, again, that's not the same.
And you can look at Tiger. Finally, you know, it took him how long?
Right.
7-8 years.
And even then, he's still
a shell.
I think he would still, you know, if you injected him with Truth Serum, I think he would still say that he's not the same. He doesn't have the same amount of uber confidence he did back in his first run in his heyday. And so I think that's what Fultz is going to have to overcome. And I think it's going to be a challenge. I mean, I hope he can get back. I'd love to see him. I mean, to be honest, I'm fascinated by just what's happened to him. And I hope it turns out for him because I'd love to see him overcome what's gone on to this point in his career and be able to have a long and successful career in the NBA.
All right. So staying in the East, just a few more topics, but staying in the East, a guy that I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about, Mr. Kemba Walker. Obviously scored 60 the other night. Overtime lost the game. They had a chance to win it and they didn't, but 60 points still absurd, following that up with 43. Now, here is Kemba Walker's stat line. 29.6 points per game. Now, that's with the 60 points. So, I mean, that he's shooting 47%. He's averaging 4 rebounds a game and 6 assists. That's a pretty good stat line for Kemba Walker.
I'll tell you what, Kemba is a guy that if you go back and you look at what he was projected to be when he came out of UConn, there's nobody, I don't think anybody who was analyzing that draft who would have ever said that Kemba Walker was going to turn into the type of player that he's become. And I think the biggest thing with him is, and I've read, I think, at least one article and listened to a podcast where they talked a little bit about his work ethic and what he's done since he's come into the NBA. And basically, he just has maniacally worked on improving his jump shot. And by adding the three-pointer to his game, which if you go back and look at his stats in his early career, you know, his first or second year, I mean, he shot barely any threes. You have the stats there?
Yeah, here. So I don't have a three-point stats, but he shot 36% in his rookie season.
Yeah,
that's so, for the season. He was averaging 12 points per game.
Right, and so, I mean, I'm sure if he was shooting 36% from the field, you can imagine what he was shooting from three-point range. And so just to be able to add that, and he's just a guy that has gotten better every single year in the league. And if you're an NBA team or you're an NBA fan of a particular player, you can't ask for anything more than what Kemba Walker has done, which is from the time he's come into the league, he's done nothing but get better every year. Yeah. He adds a piece to his game. He just becomes a better player each and every season. And you wish and you hope as an NBA GM or as a fan that the guys that come onto your team end up doing those things. Like, I think back to our conversation with Coach Showalter from USA Basketball talking about Colin Sexton, and one of the things that he said about him was that the guy just loves basketball. He loves to work at it. He loves to play, and he loves to get better. And to me, there's no better endorsement of a guy that I'm about to draft or a guy that's going to be on my team than that. And again, that's not to say that he's going to be an all-star or he's going to be this or he's going to be that, but if a guy's willing to put in the time and put in the work like Kemba's done, it's great to see a guy like that be able to experience the kind of success that he's had over the beginning part of this season.
Okay, so just two really quick tidbits here. That game that he scored 60 points against Philly, he shot 21 of 34. He took a lot of shots.
That's good shooting for a guy who's 5'9".
Yeah, it is really good shooting. Okay, but the only team to hold Kemba Walker in a game to single digits, your Cleveland Cavaliers.
Man, all season, only team to hold him to single digits. He scored 7 points.
Was he 2 for 14?
No, 2 for 16.
Sorry,
And that was, by the way, the game before the Philly game.
Okay.
So the game before the Philly game, he had 7 points on 2 of 16 shooting in 36 minutes.
Yeah, he did not play well. I actually watched quite a bit of that game, and he did not play well. But again, if your shot's not going in, sometimes you just have an off. Well,
and he had 6 assists that game, so he still contributed in some capacity. But I found that interesting that the only team that's held him to single digits all season were the terrible defense of the Cavs. And I don't necessarily know that it was a terrible defense or it was really he just didn't have a shot.
Who's our defensive coordinator this year? Who's our defensive coach?
Hugh Jackson?
Who's in charge of the defense?
Condoleezza Rice? I mean,
that, by the way, I'm obviously totally off topic, but when I saw that come across the wire, I was like, I'm glad John Dorsey got out ahead of that and sort of scored a squash. And again, not that Condoleezza Rice, whatever, but how do you hire someone who's never, like, has never been a coach anywhere? How could you consider that person for a head coaching job?
It was the Brownsiest thing to happen on a bye week. Like, they had been really up in the headlines. Everyone had been talking out positively there. And then that shows up on Sunday morning. Like,
it made absolutely no sense on any level. Like, she's a Browns fan. She likes football. Like, I've heard her name bandied about as a potential NFL commissioner, where that to me makes a lot more sense,
because she's
had experience running big, large departments
and supervising people. Putting her in the front office wouldn't be a terrible idea. Like, right, in some capacity, I would be completely all for that. But when I saw that text, I sent it to my dad, and I don't want to get political. He's a big Condi fan, and he sends me a text. They will never hire her. That's crazy talk. And then, like, 5 minutes later, the Browns sent that whole response.
Right. When I saw it first, I was like, that can't be true. And then, obviously, Dorsey put out a statement. But anyway, we digressed.
Okay, the last thing we'll talk about is, I guess this will be really East-centric, folks. We talked a little bit West, and we'll talk about the West next time. More focused. The Wizards, the report yesterday from Woj. A Woj bomb happened while I was, I think it was during the school day yesterday, that the Wizards are finally...
Wait, you're checking your phone during school?
I got the Woj bomb, man.
All right, good work.
It was, but I get a little Twitter alert when Woj sends tweets out, because he's got a lot of important things to say. It said that the Wizards were finally willing to listen to trades for Beal, Wall, and everyone. I think the biggest problem that they run into with the whole blowing it up thing is, who's going to take on the Wall contract?
Well, so here's the thing. I think if you look at their three main guys, so Wall, Beal, Porter.
Oh, man, Dwight Howard's going to be mad you didn't mention his name.
Well, I don't think Dwight is really the Dwight Bola virus, as Bill Simmons would say. I don't think that teams are going to be clamoring to get Dwight.
He's still got like 24 more teams to hit. And
he does. You know, if you need one or two of his marketable skills, I guess you might be considering Dwight. But I don't think there's a huge market for him. So the three guys that do matter in terms of the Wizards blowing it up, I would say Beal is obviously the guy that's the most attractive of those three, in my opinion. Then the question becomes, between the next two, is Wall's contract so onerous that are teams willing to take on that contract? And Porter has obviously played a lot less this year, and he has a contract where he's overpaid. And I read something the other day, like, can you pay a guy as much as they paid Otto Porter, who's probably never going to make an All-Star game? And if you're going to have a good team, you can't pay a guy who's never going to make an All-Star team the kind of money that Otto Porter's making. So I don't know where Porter or Wall could end up. I think Beal, you could manufacture tons of scenarios that make sense. Again, Washington would probably get back, 50 cents on the dollar for Beal. But they could certainly, there would be plenty of people that would be interested in Bradley Beal. The John Wall market, I just don't know what it is at the price tag that he's going to come to. I read the piece on The Ringer by Kevin O'Connor that, maybe the Pelicans could talk themselves into John Wall, playing at a fast up-tempo pace and put him with Jrue Holiday and Anthony Davis. But I still think when you're looking at the last year of that contract, you're going to pay John Wall, I think it's close to like $45 million or something like that. It's ridiculous. when he's 32 or 33 years old. I just don't that to me, that just doesn't make any sense.
All right, so tonight, the Wizards beat the Clippers, and Wall scored 30, Beal scored 27. Trade them away. Get them while they're hot.
Beal and Wall together again.
Like,
they're back. They're back,
maybe, baby. Maybe they galvanized. And then my boy Jeff Green had 26 tonight, I think.
Uncle Jeff Green.
He had a good game, too. He had 20. Sorry, not 26.
Right.
But, I mean, maybe they just needed a little motivation. Maybe.
I think they need a change of scenery. I think that blowing that team up is probably the right way to go.
Even better than that was the fact that the Clippers were up 40-21 after the first quarter, and then the Wizards won the third quarter by 10 and the fourth quarter by 16. So they played well in the fourth quarter, apparently. But
yeah, I don't see John Wall getting traded. I could definitely see Beal getting traded.
I agree.
Although, again, all it takes is one GM to talk themselves into John Wall, and then the Wizards, I think, would be dance party USA at the Wizards headquarters if they were able to trade John Wall, I would think.
One last thing, just kind of, I apologize, but this was just put out like a little bit ago, that this whole shoulder situation for Markelle Fultz, Brett Brown and Elton Brand knew nothing about it until 10 minutes before practice on Tuesday, so they didn't even know that he was going to go to a shoulder specialist. So that, once again, just reiterates to your point that I think it's a psychological thing, and he just decided, I'm going to go to the shoulder guy.
I mean, again, it's like I said, I think there could be some physical problem with his shoulder. This whole thing may have actually started with some type of physical problem to his shoulder, which caused him to alter his form and start to do strange things with it. And then once that shoulder healed, or maybe didn't heal, he wasn't able to recover.
Elton Brand said, I don't know how long he's going to be out. I know Monday is the consultation. I asked, why Monday? His response, it was the best day they could get an appointment. Elton Brand said, I thought they would move him up a bit. He is an NBA player after all. So Monday's the appointment, so that's when he's going.
All right, so here's... okay, so... I don't even know if I can address that quote, but is Markelle Fultz, how much longer is he a Sixer after that quote? Can he make it through the season? I mean, what could they get at this point? What could they get, a second round pick straight up for Markelle Fultz at this point? I mean, I don't know, because any team that's going to trade for him, I think you'd have to want to require a psychological evaluation of the guy before
it was the best day they could get an appointment.
And I know I have the same problem when I try to get a digest appointment.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to schedule a physical,
and it's healthcare now.
I got to schedule it 8 months out, so maybe Fultz is, Fultz rate's a little higher than me, but at any rate.
All right.
All right, well, we will leave it at that. To all our loyal listeners out there, we want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
If you're looking for a great way to spend the holidays playing some basketball, please join us at one of our Head Start Basketball Holiday Camps on December 27th and 28th, 2018. We'll have a camp at Hoop Guru Courthouse in Hinckley and also at St. Pascal Baylon School in Highland Heights. The Head Start Basketball Holiday Camps will emphasize the fundamentals of basketball with individual attention given to each camper. You'll improve your basketball skills and have a ton of fun at the Head Start Basketball Holiday Camp. To register or get more information, please visit our website, www.headstartbasketball.com. Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.